welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. and always nice to have you join us. Going to be talking with Arthur Stein. Subject is money. To be specific, your money. How do you protect it? How do you make your thrift savings plan grow? And what do you do when we have these periods of shutdown? You know, when the shutdown started, the assumption was that nobody who was furloughed would be paid. That changed, but people did not know that going in. And I heard from any number of people, and they voluntarily called and emailed us here at Federal News Radio. And a number of them, they wanted advice about what to do with their TSP. Of course, we, A, can't give it. B, we're not qualified to give it. But people like Arthur Stein are. But what I found interesting was so many of them, particularly men, said they were going to move their money into the G Fund, the super safe, never has a bad day, but also never has a particularly good day, Treasury Securities G Fund, until the crisis was over, and then they would move it back. And, of course, I guess the question is, When are those two dates? When is the best date to get out? And when is the best date to get in? Arthur, thoughts?
Well, actually, the C fund ended up being up during the crisis. I mean, if you compared it to the day before and the day after and everything, you lost money if you moved into the G fund. And this is, the problem with market timing and trying to move out of stocks and into the G fund or into a money market fund for investments you might have outside the TSP is... it's very difficult to do, and because it's hard to sell at the right time, and then it's extremely difficult to buy back in at the right time. And what I find, and this is after many years of talking to lots and people about their investments, is people tend just to not buy back in at all. And I actually did an analysis yesterday. Looking back 10 years with the TSP that, if in October of 2003, October 2nd or October 1st, you'd invested $1,000 in the C fund, which is the S&P 500 index stock fund. And at the very top of the market, when the C fund topped out, which was in July of 2007, if you were a genius and sold it, the top of the market and put the money in the G fund and left it there, you actually ended up with less money than if you just left your money in the C fund, took this big hit, the worst market decline since the Great Depression, and just left your money in the C fund, left your money in stocks, you would have ended up being better off. And, most people don't sell at the very top. And it's just not a good strategy. Stocks are a great long-term investment historically. Of course, past performance, no guarantee of future performance. But, you've got 200 years of history to look at. And over long periods of time, stocks have consistently outperformed bonds and cash. Now, I can't promise you. I'm not predicting that that'll happen in the future. But I'm one of those people who don't know a reason why it would change. And certainly if you look at the TSP, what you're going to see is that the stock funds outperform the bond fund and the G fund over the last 10 years, 3 years, and 1 year by big amounts. Now, over the past 5 years, the F fund and the G fund, which is kind of a supercharged savings account, did outperform over the last 5 years, but that's because, you've got that 2008 decline and you're taking that big hit right there. So market timing, I don't think it's a very good idea.
Yeah, I mean, if it worked, it would be a wonderful thing. But the question is this. The figures that you brought in show us here, by market timing, the best that would have happened to them would be that they would have lost 8.7% of that original $1,000 from the C fund to the G fund. And at worst, if they had sold at the wrong time, they would have lost 61%, or their account would be down 61%.
Yeah, correct? Compared to just leaving your money in the C fund.
Well, that's an interesting thing to overcome, because we're bombarded with self-help books and experts and gurus on television and radio, and people who, particularly when they're talking about exercise and sports, and there's a commercial I like, and it says a body in motion tends to stay in motion, a body at rest tends to stay at rest, and it's the evils of inertia and how bad it is to do nothing. You know, we should always be proactive and do something, except maybe when it comes to investing for your retirement. And then inertia may, I mean, am I silly? Inertia may be your best friend?
Well, you may or may not, depending upon whether you've set things up correctly in the beginning. What I see with a lot of people walk in my office is that they came up with some asset allocation when they first started work, and they haven't done much with it since. And that's frequently, you know, over-investing in the G fund, ending up not only with a very low rate of return, but a rate of return that doesn't match inflation, so that the purchasing power of their investments have declined over time. Of course, yeah, the other mistake that people can make is trying to trade in and out. Both of these are mistakes. And a problem, I think, with a lot of federal employees is they are told constantly that they can do this themselves, when in many, if not most cases, certainly probably the majority of cases, they would be better off, I think, paying for professional help, getting the allocation of their portfolio correct for their situation, and then looking at it every 1 or 2 years to make sure that it still meets their needs.
I heard from a guy, emailed Tony with the IRS, and I've heard from him before. Very delightful fellow. We sort of become friends via email. But he was talking about his situation during the shutdown. And I think I sent you this letter, but he said during the shutdown, said he was lucky, had a new granddaughter. He turned 59 and a half and withdrew all of his TSP money and was reinvesting with a private company. I was hoping to increase those funds through a private company for 1 year before I plan to retire in September 2014. I'm still contributing 15%, I assume, to the TSP and getting my match, so I will add those monies to my accounts when I retire. Anyway, I learned when in the process of this money transfer that the TSP workers are not feds, they're contracted. So the transaction went on with no delays. I plan to siphon off whatever I needed to take care of business if the furlough would go on or we wouldn't get back pay. But he has taken his money out of the TSP, even though he's still in the government and still contributing regularly.
Yeah, you're allowed to make a one-time withdrawal, and if you're over 59 and a half, there's no 10% penalty. It has some other effects than subsequent to that. But I think the important point here is that Tony has admitted to himself that he needs help managing his investments.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good thing. And he went out and he got help by investing with a private company. Now, he did that while he was still working. The more common situation would be, you know, once somebody retires, that they would then transfer their money to an IRA. It's not a taxable event, so that they can get professional management. And I think people would really benefit from that. And, you know, when you're retired, your choices are more complicated because you're no longer just interested in building investment assets over long periods of time. You're also looking at some point in time when you're going to have to start taking money from your investments to live on. But you still have other monies that you're not going to be spending for 10 or 20 or 30 years, you know, much later in your retirement. So at that point, you then need to have separate strategies for the money that you're going to need to spend in the next, you know, 1 to 5 or maybe even 10 years, and then the funds that you're not going to need for 10 or more years. And that's, again, where professional money management and investment manager can really help.
Well, just to be the devil's advocate, I'm not an expert on this at all, but one time Francis Rose and I were interviewing John Bogle, you know, the founder of the Vanguard Fund, he's the godfather of the index funds and whatnot, and he said he would love to find a way to get into the thrift savings plan for two reasons. One is the G fund, the safety of it, but the other is its low administrative fees, and I believe, if this still holds true, that the TSP's administrative fees are half, again, what Vanguard's are, and Vanguard's is the lowest in the business. So,
well, it's interesting, Mike, because I looked at that before I came in today.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between the expenses for the TSP funds and the identical index funds, the funds in Vanguard that look that use the identical index, around 0.1% per year. Now, some of them are as little as like, you know, less than 1% difference per 0.1% per year difference. One of the funds is like 0.14% per year more expensive. The differences are very small. Where the differences are very large is when people are not investing appropriately, when they don't have, you know, their long-term money in the C and the S and the I fund, and then they lose, you know, maybe 5 or 10 or 15% per year over time.
Amazing. Okay, got to take a short break here. Talking with Arthur Stein. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com.
Do you hear that? That's a fighter jet. It travels Mach 2 and weighs 20 tons. And we just made it invisible. Raytheon technology not only helps aircraft stay hidden from the enemy, but provides communication and combat advantages for planes, ships, land vehicles, and soldiers. After all, when your mission is EW, innovation comes at the speed of light. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's another success story. An SM-3 missile heading toward its target. With each launch, Raytheon adds to our record of more successful intercepts of test missiles in space than any other company, bringing integrated, cost-effective protection to countless nations. After all, when your mission is missile defense, success is the most powerful ally of all. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
The threat is real. Every day, cybercrimes are launched against individuals, companies, and governments. From identity theft to espionage to attacks on the nation's most critical networks. How do we protect ourselves in a world where the new frontline is online? Battelle has developed some of the world's most advanced cyber technologies that help clients in defense, homeland security, energy, health, and financial services to detect and protect against threats. Visit cyberdoctrine.org for more information.
Here's Rear Admiral Robert Day, CIO, U.S. Coast Guard, on the Federal Executive Forum on Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by Schneider Electric.
As an operator on the front lines, I need a new capability. I'm basically going to be able to go to an enterprise catalog and say, I need this, I need it now, and I only need it for these 10 days. And literally, it's going to be no different than me going on the internet now saying, I want a Google Plus account, I want this much storage in the cloud, and those types of capabilities.
To listen to the whole program, made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to Federal News Radio. Radio.com.
Struggling to meet your data center consolidation and sustainability goals? Look to Schneider Electric. From assessments, planning, and infrastructure improvements to funding vehicles to overcome capital shortfalls, Schneider Electric offers the industry's leading expertise that you need to create more efficient, available data centers. With their future-minded solutions, you'll realize lower life cycle costs, enhanced physical security, and a smaller building footprint. That's Schneider-Electric.us.
Navy football is moving full speed ahead, and you won't want to miss any of the action. See the midshipmen host Pittsburgh for homecoming on Saturday, October 26th at 1 p.m., presented by Verizon Wireless. Don't miss the excitement. Call 800-US-4-NAVY or visit NavySports.com. That's 800-US-4-NAVY or NavySports.com. Come see Navy versus Pittsburgh on homecoming, Saturday, October 26th at 1 p.m., presented by Verizon Wireless. Game day, the Navy way.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He's a financial planner in the Washington area, Bethesda, Maryland, to be exact. Arthur, would you give your address?
Arthur Stein Financial is my firm, and my website is www.arthursteinfinancial.com, and my email is art@arthursteinfinancial.com. And so I'm based in Bethesda. I also meet with clients in Alexandria and McLean.
Okay, so you do work in Virginia as well.
Yeah.
Go back to a column I had a couple of weeks ago. I'd written that there were 929 people in the thrift savings plan who are millionaires. That is, their thrift savings accounts are a million or more. And the caveat was a lot of these people brought it with them. They were high-priced lawyers, high-priced medical types who came in from the private sector, maybe as federal judges or something like that. They brought their money, their outside money with them, put it in the TSP, and bingo, they're millionaires. But not all. And I heard from three different people who said, I'm one of the 929, and I'm not a rich guy. I didn't come in rich. I did it the old-fashioned way. And one of them who said, by the way, he knows you. He right. said, don't use his initials, but he knows you. But he said, he tells how he does it. And he did it the old-fashioned way. He invested the max, put it in. He put it in the C and S and the I funds. As you were saying, these are the ones for great potential growth if you can take the roller coaster effect of them. But here's one. He says, here's rule number two. No one right now should have money in the F fund. I'm hoping that perhaps the TSP board is actually developing a separate F fund for short, moderate-term bonds, less than 5 to 7 years, and another separate one for long-term bonds. But obviously, the F fund is bonds, and very few people, including myself, know anything about it or know much about it.
And what he's referring to is this. If interest rates go up, the value of existing bonds goes down. And you don't have this issue with the G fund because it doesn't fluctuate in value. Once again, it acts like a savings account only with a very high interest rate compared to a normal savings account. But with the F fund, it invests in bonds, and those bonds fluctuate in value. And actually, the F fund for the year, for this year, year to date, is down just a little under 2% for the year. And that includes reinvested dividends. So you can see that, you know, the F fund can lose money. And what people are worried about, and I've certainly been worried about it, is that with interest rates so low and our budget deficit so high, it would seem like interest rates should be going up, which is going to hurt the value of existing bonds. But so I have, with my investment clients, and I manage, you know, money for investors, they're not in long-term bonds. They're in either intermediate or short-term bond mutual funds, because long-term bond mutual funds are going to go down more if interest rates go up than intermediate bond funds, and intermediate bond funds are going to go down more than short-term bond funds. So, you know, this is the issue. In terms of what TSP people should be, I would not be keeping a lot of money in the F fund. However, it's down 2% for the year. And, you know, one thing that current federal employees can do, you know, the allocation of your current TSP balance does not have to be the same allocation as your new investment money going in. So it might be a time for the biweekly investments that you're making to start directing, you know, a certain percentage of that to go into the F fund. Just because it is down, might be a good buy. Over long periods of time, the F fund outperforms the G fund. There have been a few years, certainly, where the F fund underperformed the G fund, but those are unusual and temporary.
Also, it appears there should be different investing strategies for people who are under the old civil service retirement system versus those who are under the Federal Employees Retirement System, or FERS. And brief tutorial here, CSRS people have a wonderful defined benefit plan. They get a promised fixed annuity or pension from the government. It's fully indexed inflation. Many people think it's the best system in the world, you know, the best worker-supplied system. FERS employees get a federal annuity or a pension that's about half of what people under the CSRS system get. They, at the time of retirement, if the cost of living is 2% or more, they get what's called a diet COLA. So they get a less than full inflation protection, but still something. They also have the thrift savings plan. The government automatically gives them a 1% match. And if they put in their own funds, they can get up to a total of 5%, which is which is found money. It's a tax-deferred pay raise. So they both have advantages or whatnot. But you sent me a very interesting email talking about how FERS employees and CSRS employees should maybe treat their accounts differently.
Yeah, FERS employees are in a very different position. Now, in addition to their annuity, they also have Social Security. Social Security has a full cost of living adjustment, which means whatever the inflation rate is the previous year, that's the increase you're going to get in your Social Security payment. FERS annuity, as you said, Mike, if inflation's over 2%, you're going to get less than a full inflation adjustment. So the purchasing power of your annuity is going down. Of course, your annuity, even with Social Security, your guaranteed income is going to be less than a CSRS employee worked for a long period of time. So what I see is a lot of CSRS employees who I meet with, they may not need money from their investments for decades because their annuity is so high. With FERS employees, at some point, almost all of them are going to need money from their investments to live on. And if the investments have not increased, you know, more than the rate of inflation, the purchasing power has gone down, they could be in a very bad situation. Now, I look at people individually. You know, I might get a FERS employee has a lot of investments and a very cheap lifestyle, and, you know, they might not have to worry about it. But most FERS employees, the allocation of their investment is critical because they need to increase the purchasing power of their investments after taking into account not only inflation but taxes. Remember, the money you have in the TSP, if you've got $500,000, you don't have $500,000 to spend, because when you take the money out of the TSP, you're going to pay taxes on it. So the amount you have in the TSP, I mean, figure it's worth about 30% less by the time you take the money out and pay taxes on it. So the allocation for FERS is much more important.
Okay, and we're talking here about, in your note to me, you said FERS employees need to differentiate between their TSP allocations for funds already in the TSP and then their biweekly investments.
Yes, exactly. And you could be, and I suggest this to people all the time, I mean, you know, if I get somebody coming in and they have 100% or 50% of their money in their G fund and they're a very nervous investor, I don't necessarily tell them to move that money. But what I would say to them, especially if they're young, for your biweekly investment, why don't you start putting all that money in the C and the S and the I fund? You know, if the market goes down, that's good for you because you're buying when it's cheap. And over long, and, you know, because you're investing a small amount every 2 weeks, you're not going to have a lot of money at risk. But over long periods of time, you're have the chance to get a very good rate of return, higher than you're going to get in the G fund by a considerable amount.
So you have the nest egg that you've accumulated to date, and you're nervous about the market. So you say, I can't stand it anymore. I'm moving it all into the G fund. Well, maybe it's a good move, maybe not. But in that case, they should continue to buy into the CS
and the
I fund because they're on sale.
Yeah.
As you say, past performance means anything. And
G fund can be worthwhile in a lot of way, but making biweekly investment into the G fund just makes no sense to me. I mean, if you want something conservative, make biweekly investments into the F fund at least. That can go down in value, but it'll never go down in value as much as could happen with a stock fund. And, you know, again, you know, if you're a long-term investor, then that would be a better strategy.
Well, you know, everybody in the media is doing it, politics. They're saying, do you think there's going to be another shutdown? Will the debt ceiling limit thing shut down the government? Will lack of a budget shut down the government again? And in a way, that's kind of a silly exercise because people aren't psychic. And some will say, yeah, it's going to happen, and others will say it isn't going to happen. But that doesn't mean anything. What's going to happen is going to happen. It does show you how people feel. But it doesn't tell you, it's not like voting on it, making it happen. That said, and this is in today's column, but you sent me some tips the other day for surviving not only a shutdown, but an economic crisis and some interesting things here. Would you kind of go through the bullet points?
Yeah, you know, the best way to prepare for a shutdown is also the best way to prepare for any kind of financial emergency. And it's, one, have an emergency fund. Now, I used to recommend to federal employees, you know, 3 to 6 months of living expenses in an emergency fund because, you know, their jobs were seemed so secure. Now, you know, unfortunately, the jobs don't seem so secure. I mean, we could have a shutdown. The sequester is going to cut government spending again next year unless something's done about it. You know, clearly, if the Republicans take over the House and the Senate, they're going to move to cut spending by the government, which could result in a cutback in the number of jobs. There's not that security anymore that you used to have. So build up your emergency fund, maybe 6 to 12 months of expenses. Second thing is, don't have credit card debt. I mean, that's just a huge warning sign. Pay off the credit card debt. It's okay to have a mortgage. And, you know, even a car loan is okay if it's a short-term car loan. But if you're getting a 5 or 6 year car loan, don't do that. I mean, you're buying a car that's too expensive for your situation. You know, if you're going to get a car loan, get a 1 or 2 or 3 year car loan. And the other thing you can do to prepare, besides lowering your debt, building up your emergency fund, you can also try and get a home equity line of credit. And this is what's also called a second mortgage. But what you do is you get the bank to pre-approve a home equity loan for you, but you don't take out the loan. You just know that in an emergency, that money could be available.
And you say, too, you reduce your thrift savings plan contributions, but...
Here's the thing. So, you know, a question can be, well, I don't have the money to build up an emergency fund. You know, how do I do that? Well, one, if you're making additional payments on your mortgage, stop making the additional payments on your mortgage and instead start putting it in a bank account. You may have to reduce your TSP contributions. Now, you never, if you're a FERS employee, you never want to reduce those to less than 5% because the government matches that first 5%. But if you're putting in 10 or 15% of your salary, you might have to reduce that contribution until your emergency funds are built up.
Excuse me, let me take a break here. Lauren Larson is giving us the evil eye here, and she's not evil.
I've met her. She's very nice.
We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Ask the CIO is brought to you by Learning Tree International. Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government.
Eugene Spafford is a professor of computer science at Purdue University in Indiana.
There was the attitude that only the U.S. Internet mattered, and there's still some of that present in government thinking, and that's going to have to change because it isn't only the U.S. There is no obvious national border on the Internet.
Listen to Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Get empowered with the IT skills you need to improve performance and help your agency achieve its goals. LearningTree is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government, and they're on GSA IT 70 and MOBIS 874 schedules, which means all levels of the government and qualified contractors get the best tuition savings possible. Save even more with LearningTree's 50% off select IT and management courses each week. For 50% tuition savings, go to learningtree.com/CIO. That's learningtree.com/CIO.
True innovation means anticipating challenges before they occur. Lockheed Martin was early to recognize the changing nature of naval warfare. New types of threats in coastal waters called for a new kind of combat ship. We responded with deep thinking for shallow waters, designing the littoral combat ship with speed, agility, and the most networked sensors of any surface combatant. And to make sure commanders stay one step ahead of evolving missions, The LCS is built on a flexible C-frame with interchangeable mission modules. It offers the operational flexibility to execute focused missions such as anti-submarine, mine, and surface warfare, providing access and dominance in the coastal battle space like never before. The LCS is one more example of our ongoing commitment to those who are meeting the security challenges of today and tomorrow. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
General Dynamics Information Technology, where cybersecurity is always part of the solution. Start to finish. General Dynamics IT. To learn more, go to gdit.com/cyber.
Learn how to succeed in the new federal market at the Coalition for Government Procurement's Fall Training Conference, Wednesday, October 30th at the Fairview Park Marriott. Hear directly from GSA, DOD, DHS, and VA acquisition leaders, program directors from across the government as they discuss GWACs, professional services, and DHS spending goals. Lunch with the Excellence in Partnership winners and network with industry contract managers, acquisition professionals, and business developers. To see the full agenda and to register, visit thecgp.org.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and my guest is Arthur Stein. Arthur, before we go on, give us some of your background. It fascinates me. You taught at the university in Australia.
Yeah, I was. I have a master's in economics, and I was in the Peace Corps for 2 years. But I was an economist for the government of Botswana and their Ministry of Finance. Then I went to Australia, and I taught in a university there, Murdoch University. And I came back here. I was on the House Ways and Means Committee. Then I ran my own business for a while, and then I became a financial planner about 23 years ago.
Fascinating. Fascinating, Vita. Last time we talked, or rather you talked and I listened, about protecting your nest egg, because when you retire— one of your great enemies is inflation. As you said, all of this money from the TSP is taxable at whatever your current, whatever your rate is at that time. But you figure you're maybe only going to get 7 cents on the or 70 cents on the dollar, and fighting this inflation factor.
Yeah, I mean, you have to increase the purchasing power of your money unless you're just very rich, or maybe you're a CSRS retiree and have a huge annuity that more than pays for your living expenses, and I know people like that. And, you know, people can be too conservative. You know, they're too worried about market declines in some cases. The market's going to decline. I think that, you know, instead of trying to avoid a market decline, lots of people can be better off if they just accept the declines and ride them out. I mean, the market, the stock market, say the S&P 500, which is the C fund, it's going to have a 5% decline about three times a year. It's going to have a 10% decline. These are historical averages. Those averaged about one per year, and 20% declines about every 3 years on average. We're actually due for 20% decline. And but if you ride them out and just continue investing or don't sell off your investments, it happens that, again, historically, and again, I must say past performance, no guarantee of future performance, but historically, the bigger the market decline, the greater the average annual increase in the following 5 years.
So you got to have patience and think about the inflation factor as well.
And think about the inflation, because historically stocks have outperformed not only inflation but inflation plus taxes, and have increased purchasing power.
I thought it was interesting that in your tips, which by the way are in today's Federal Report on Federal News Radio and on our homepage, but in your tips you said, if you're getting a car loan, get 1 to 3 years, because if it's four or longer, you're buying a car you really can't afford.
And I feel the same way about leasing cars, that, you know, frequently people lease because they cannot afford to buy the car they want. And, you know, as a financial planner, you know, I'm supposed to, you know, make sure that people can't be happy. You know, if you can't afford to buy the car you want, you're looking at too expensive a car. And leasing economically is usually a bad decision. It almost always ends up costing people more.
So if let's assume that there may be another shutdown, either because of the budget, the continuing resolution runs out and they can't agree on it, or the debt ceiling crisis, which comes, debt limit crisis, which comes a little bit later in the calendar. What should people be doing, in your opinion, to get ready for it, or should they be doing nothing?
Well, I wouldn't say nothing. Have an emergency fund. I'm now suggesting 6 to 12 months of living expenses. Cut your debt down, not necessarily the mortgage, but certainly if you have credit card debt, do everything you can to pay that off. Don't take out a long-term car loan. Again, one of the reasons leasing is bad is you don't own the car. So if the lease matures and you're unemployed, you don't have a car, you then are forced to, buy the car that you leased, which is going to be expensive, or to re-lease it. I mean, it's just not a good situation. And, so it's that kind of just being in good financial shape when you start that would really help you if there's another government shutdown.
Well, I like your checklist because Lauren and I were talking about this the other day. People give you the same advice. They say, have a nest egg. Have 6 months, have a year, pay your bills on time, and you think, how do I get the money to do that? But you have suggested ways to get the money.
It doesn't make sense to max out your contributions to the TSP if you don't have a good emergency fund, if you have a lot of credit card debt, especially if you're paying high interest on it. Now, again, you always want to put in at least 5% to get that government match. But maybe cut back your contributions for a while, pay off the debt, and build up your emergency fund. And that way, if there is another government shutdown and you need money, you're going to be in much better shape.
I've known several people that did just that, and these are very financially savvy people. But when their kids hit college age, they cut back on their TSP contributions. They all, as you suggested, they all kept putting in 5% to get that 5% match from the government. But they did cut back for a long period of time, and they got the kids through school, and they still have very handsome TSP balances.
Well, the great thing about, FERS employment, one of the great things about it is if you're putting in 5% and the government's matching it with 5%, that's a 10% exactly. contribution every year. That's pretty good right there.
Okay. Well, listen, Arthur Stein,
thank you very much.
Give us your call letters again, if you will.
My website is www.arthursteinfinancial.com. Email address is art@arthursteinfinancial.com. And I do have a blog on my website where, I've written about various topics. And you also, if you'd like to, you can get on my website and ask me to start sending you my monthly newsletter.
Very good. Thank you, sir. We're going to take a short break here on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com. Be back talking with Sean Riley from the Federal Times.
They say a picture is worth a thousand words. Well, picture your family and your home safe and secure with Ackerman Security Systems. Picture yourself controlling your system remotely from your mobile phone anytime, anywhere. Picture yourself watching video clips of happenings at home before your kids get home from school. Picture everything you can do with the money saved by choosing Ackerman Security.
Talk about money saved. Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring is only $18.95 a month. And here's a special offer for October only. Get up to 6 months of monitoring free. There really is good reason Ackerman Security Systems is the Washington area's most trusted security company. It's because at Ackerman, security is all they do, and they do it better than anyone else. And with a special like up to 6 months free, why wait? Make the switch to Ackerman. This offer is only good in October. Call today, 888-999-1070. That's 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
The Land Warfare Industry Report, provided by Raytheon.
The U.S. DoD Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense Public Affairs recently announced a foreign military sale contract modification award to Raytheon for 41 improved thermal sight systems on the light armored vehicle known as the LAV-25 for Saudi Arabia. Raytheon is committed to U.S. and international allied forces to sustain forward-looking infrared thermal imaging systems, increasing warfighter survivability and effectiveness by enabling identification and determination of threats faster with more or precision, day or night.
Do you hear that? That's a warfighter on patrol, silent as the night, but never in the dark. Raytheon third-generation forward-looking infrared thermal imaging gives warfighters an overmatch advantage more cost-effectively than retrofitting and maintaining current systems. After all, when the mission is owning the night, forward-looking takes forward-thinking. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Pissarro as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
So now, at long last, after all that Virginia families have been through, the U.S. government has reopened. And guess who wants us to have amnesia and forget all that's been done to us? Ken Cuccinelli. That's right, the same Ken Cuccinelli who had Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, the Tea Party leader of the shutdown, come in and campaign for him. And the same Ken Cuccinelli who has been Mr. Shutdown himself here in Virginia. In 2008, Cuccinelli tried to defund Planned Parenthood and brought Virginia's government to a standstill. And in 2004, Cuccinelli said he wished Virginia's Republicans would shut down the government over Governor Mark Warner's bipartisan budget. So tell Ken Cuccinelli that we don't have amnesia, and we're going to remember that he's a Tea Party shutdown politician who's focused on his own agenda, not us.
I'm Terry McAuliffe, candidate for governor, and this ad was sponsored by Terry McAuliffe for governor.
A new pilot program from the U.S. Postal Service promises citizens the ability to access everything from federal health benefits to student loan information with just one ID and password. Using a cloud service hub, agencies will be able to accept citizen credentials. This will also change authentication and access procedures. Join FCA Bethesda November 7th at the Bethesda North Marriott as federal leaders discuss challenges faced by agencies as they transition to the next generation of identity and access management. Register today at fciabethesda.org/NOVbreakfast.
Get the latest TSP numbers and thrift savings plan news every day on federalnewsradio.com's TSP page. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search TSP.
Mike Causey, welcome back to your turn. Glad you stuck with us. We're going to be talking with Sean Riley. He's a senior writer with the Federal Times and who's been observing the shutdown antics as closely as anybody. Sean, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, Mike?
Hey, thank you for joining us again. Well, this time last week, the end was near. We thought the world was going over the cliff, but somehow we made it.
It was another rabbit pulled out of a hat. As you recall, it's just last Wednesday. It looked like things were pretty dire, and then all of a sudden, the House was unable to pass its own bill to reopen the government. Action shifted to the Senate, and the result for federal employees, those who were furloughed in any case, was that they, are getting back pay. I think some have already received it. And this shutdown also will probably give them a 1% pay raise, a cost of living increase, essentially. Not a cost of living increase, but an increase in January that they might not have gotten otherwise.
Yeah, that one really sort of sneaked through, didn't it?
Well, it all depends. The irony here also is it doesn't require Congress to take any action under an executive order by President Obama issued in August. Authorizing the 1% increase, all that was necessary was for Congress not to take any action. Now, normally, appropriations bills start in the House and then go to the Senate. In this case, though, because the House was unable to pass its own version of a continuing resolution, the action shifted to the Senate, where Senator Barbara Mikulski of Maryland, who has a very large number of federal employees in her state, chairs the Appropriations Committee. And Senator Mikulski ensured that there wasn't anything in the bill that would keep the raise from taking effect.
Yeah, it's in the history of the Federal Pay Comparability Act. The tradition has been that whether President Clinton or President Bush that they would recommend a lower raise than the comparability formula called for. Congress, whether run by the Republicans or the Democrats, would do an end run around them and impose a higher amount of money. But I don't recall a time, and correct me if I'm wrong, when it actually happened this way, whereas the Congress originally proposed no raise, the president said give them one, and then it's just going to sort of happen.
Yeah, I don't know of anything comparable, but of course this was an extraordinary sequence of events.
Well, you know, the whole thing, that they always say the past is prologue, but not necessarily so. The shutdown of 1995-96, the people got back pay, and we sort of expected that that would happen again. Then we had a brief shutdown earlier this year at the FAA, the FAA, and they decided not to give them back pay. And then, as you pointed out on one of the shows, the Department of Transportation found funds somewhere to pay this relatively small number of people. But I think a lot of us thought, well, the precedent has been set here that Congress is not going to award back pay automatically anymore.
That was my assumption as well. And I think we were all surprised, including some folks who lobby for federal employee organizations. But, the 95-96 shutdowns were about federal spending, and this one was much more about, essentially defunding or blocking implementation of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. I think a lot of members of Congress were sensitive to the fact that, federal employees essentially were caught in the crossfire, and that one commonly heard refrain was that, federal employees are unable to do their jobs, are being, forced out of work, essentially, because Congress couldn't do its job and pass a budget. And also, we talked about before, there are, Republicans and members of Congress, just like Democrats, often have plenty of federal employees in their districts.
Yeah, well, and it's sometimes, too, you get a feeling that some of these politicians delight when they're roasting bureaucrats. But in this case, you had the conservative House majority, the Republican majority in the House, that led the charge for back pay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think, I was just reading, I think yesterday, that Utah, for example, the largest employer, Utah's a pretty red state. The federal government is the largest employer. And if you furlough, that federal workforce don't pay them, that's a hit to your local economy as well. So that may have been a factor in Congress's thinking in addition.
Ogden, Utah is my poster boy for when people say the government is all inside the Beltway. In Ogden, Utah, you either work for Hill Air Force Base as a civilian, you work for the Internal Revenue Service, they have a huge service center there, or you work for the Forest Service, or you may not have a job. It's very important. A lot of people don't realize this. The AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, is the largest union in Oklahoma.
I did not know that.
And you go on and on. Decatur, Alabama is a major federal center. And someone told me the other day that there are two direct flights from Washington National to Decatur every day, showing how important the government is there. And you have these cities all around the country, and the Tidewater area. And if you notice the ad that preceded this show, it's a surprise to me, but it was a political ad in Virginia, obviously aimed at federal workers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, I think, and it'll be interesting to see whether this episode has any impact going forward on perception of federal workers, and also on the willingness or interest of members of Congress in bashing them.
My colleague Jack Moore had a story the other day talking about is there a rift between people who worked and people who didn't work, particularly now that they're both going to get paid. And he quoted a Social Security employee who I think very wisely said, "Don't use my name," but he said in effect, it's something to the effect that they're rewarding the losers, the ones who were considered not exceptional, that were not exempt, and that they're appeared to be some tension in offices. Have you picked that up yet?
In some cases, yeah. And I heard from one employee who was non-essential or not accepted, I guess, is the preferred terminology. Couldn't quite understand why that was the case. And there is some frustration, I think, that, some people had to go to work. They weren't necessarily paid immediately, but they did have to go to work. And now you've got a lot of other people who were furloughed and will be paid regardless. I think what federal personnel officials would say, one, is that, they frown on the use of the terms essential, non-essential, even though many feds, of course, use them themselves. And that the, you know, determination on who works and who doesn't is based on, you know, statutory criteria such as, you know, is a person, you know, particular individual's job necessary to protect, you know, life or secure property, that kind of thing. It's not necessarily based on, you know, the importance of a particular job, but I think it's inevitable that in these kinds of situations, and this is part of the disruption that a shutdown like this causes, you know, are going to have people drawing distinctions, and there will be some resentment in some cases. I'm not sure it's widespread throughout the government, but certainly it is troubling to some federal employees.
I heard some knowledgeable White House-oriented reporters this morning talking about the problems, the glitch, if you can call it that, with the Affordable Care Act and the its website, how it's just behaving very badly. And they were talking about the president won't go after Secretary Sebelius of Health and Human Services, in part because she's popular, but also because it would be a very difficult confirmation process. It would give Congressman Daryl Issa of the House Committee a chance to go in and go at the Affordable Care Act again. But they were speculating about who's going to be the fall guy for this. Do you think, as often happens, that some federal employees may be thrown under the bus?
I'm honestly not sure how this is going to play out because, of course, you know, the buck ultimately, as Harry Truman, you know, famously said, the buck stops, you know, with the president.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this case, I think it seems that responsibility for this project was so diffused. And from what I've read, Secretary Sebelius was not particularly involved in the actual implementation or, you know, oversight of the contractors setting up the website. You know, that seems to have been done by this, you know, part of HHS called the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services that, again, from what I've read, didn't have a whole lot of experience in doing this kind of thing. It's not clear exactly who will take the fall for this. I think it's going to depend on how quickly they can get these glitches fixed and start getting people enrolled. Certainly, if this continues, though, somebody may get responsible.
Sean, I hate to do this, but with about 30 seconds, what's the news on buyouts?
I think they're continuing throughout the government, but those aren't necessarily made public. But I heard, for example, the Defense Logistics Agency is offering some. You know, the Postal Service has an ongoing, it's not buyouts, but it's early retirement program for some executives and managers.
Very good. Well, we'll track it next week. Thank you, Sean Ryder, for being with us. Thanks, Lauren Larson, for producing things. We'll see you here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week. Stay safe.
Thanks, Mike.
They say a picture is worth a thousand words. Well, picture your family and your home safe and secure with Ackerman Security Systems. Picture yourself controlling your system remotely from your mobile phone anytime, anywhere. Picture yourself watching video clips of happenings at home before your kids get home from school. Picture everything you can do with the money saved by choosing Ackerman Security.
Talk about money saved. Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring is only $18.95 a month. And here's a special offer for October only. Get up to 6 months of monitoring free. There really is good reason Ackerman Security Systems is the Washington area's most trusted security company. It's because at Ackerman, security is all they do, and they do it better than anyone else. And with a special like up to 6 months free, why wait? Make the switch to Ackerman. This offer is only good in October. Call today, 888-999-1070. That's 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
Where do some of the country's best of the best college graduates go? Well, if you're in technology, you head to Silicon Valley, and finance, it's Wall Street. And if medicine is your passion, you come here to Kaiser Permanente. What brings top medical school graduates from Harvard, Yale, and Johns Hopkins here? Simply put, Kaiser Permanente lets doctors be doctors, not paper pushers or insurance noodlers. Our unique system of healthcare was set up from the start to clear the distractions and let doctors do exactly what they were called to do, care for patients. Using every resource, every technological advancement, every piece of evidence they can get their hands on, they come here because Kaiser Permanente makes great doctors even better doctors. Where do you go to get some of medicine's very best? Join us at kp.org to find your doctor, because the best of the best members deserve the best of the best choice. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
What is the national strategy for information sharing and safeguarding? How has information sharing matured across the information sharing environment, the ISE? What are the biggest challenges facing the ISE? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Shemendra Paul, Program Manager for the Information Sharing Environment, next week on the Business of Government Hour.